Let us begin with our everyday democracy to reclaim.
Welcome to Heiligendamm.
What would be your main questions to the G8 leaders?
A very simple question. Which body of people elected you to gang up and make decisions on our behalf? The second one would be, how long will you fiddle while the planet burns?
Flash Radio is a podcast from and about the G8 2007 in Heiligendamm, Germany. We will broadcast a daily half-hour news summary from the 2nd of June through to the 10th. For more information, go to www.flashradio.wordpress.com.
Day 5 at the G8, and you could easily imagine that you had mistakenly walked onto the film set of some crazed movie director, with more helicopters than Apocalypse Now, and more extras than Ben-Hur. Looking like the lost crowd from a giant rock festival, thousands of protesters spent large parts of today walking through fields and scrambling through forests in an effort to reach the security fence which surrounds, arguably, the 8 most powerful people on Earth. The message? Change is needed. On the subject of apocalypse, the G8 leaders suddenly announced today that they are planning to reduce global warming gas emissions by 50% by the year 2050. Perhaps they heard the sounds of tens of thousands of people at the high security perimeter fence and forgot where the keys to their helicopters were. Today's podcast looks at the huge protest which dominated the day, culminating with a party on the main eastern gate entrance to the summit venue and a massive water cannon display and tear gas show on the western gate. On a slightly more cerebral note, today also saw the alternative summit get into full swing with talks by Indian ecologist, activist and writer Vandana Shiva, among others. Flash Radio's reporters were there to capture the atmosphere from this inspirational event. But first, given the size of the turnout and the energy expressed at the blockades, we return to the Block G8 demonstrations which took place over the course of the day. Flash Radio brings you a series of reports direct from the heart of the action.
The Flash Radio team consists of 8 people at the moment, and we all decided that we wanted to go on the big demo. Today's Thursday, the 7th of June, and today is the big blockade day. We are kind of hiding, actually, from police helicopters every now and again. I'm sure they can see us. It's just, at the moment, a game of patrolling where we are. There are now 11 of us, and we're just walking through a field of beans again to see if we can get through and not get into a police line. We've just met a group of people who told us that they got stopped and sent back, so we're trying to not fall into that line. Yeah, we just bumped into another group of people, and yeah, what did they say?
Basically, they've been to the West Gate, and they were saying the German police are blockading the roads themselves with the water cannons and with loads of police, but that means it only slows traffic to the summit down rather than stopping it, because they obviously let the delegates through. They think there are several thousands of protesters in the meadows and fields around the roads, but the roads are so blocked off that they can't get onto it.
I've just come straight over the field now, and I can see thousands of protesters. It's a beautiful sight, lots of people walking in the hot sun. We've got our hats on and our sunblock, and now we're just walking to the gate, which was prohibited. And it was a relatively easy walk, actually, compared to Glen Eagles, where we walked in the forest for 6 hours in the dark and in the rain. So today's been beautiful, glorious sunshine. We had a picnic, and now we can see thousands of people at the gate that they told us we couldn't be at. We spoke to two local people just now. Can you tell me what they said?
Yeah, there are two local farmers, and I asked them what they think about this situation. And they were quite frank, actually. They don't mind these people coming at all. They're saying they can see how all the people are trying to keep damage limited, and yeah, they didn't really mind at all. And but basically, they were saying they're very firmly against violence, and they don't want any violence to happen here. And so far, they're happy the way it's gone. But they're also saying, well, you know, no change is being achieved on either side of the fence. They're saying, well, okay, the guys on the inside, they're going to get nothing done because they're just meeting for a few hours, and what can you decide, especially in sort of large issues like the ones they should be talking about and will be talking about, you know, how can you make any progress in that short amount of time? And on the other hand, they were saying, well, you know, on this side of the fence, you know, well, actually, this was quite interesting. They were saying, well, you know, you can't really change anything from this side of the fence without violence, and they can't really see any positive results from violent action either. So they're sort of paralyzed, you know, with their sort of vision of how change could be achieved. But they were very firm that they thought change should be achieved and was necessary.
And they don't mind us traipsing through their field.
No, they could see that people were making paths and most people were using those paths, and they said, well, you know, that's like in the scale of things, you know, that's fairly little. That's all right.
They sound quite cool.
Yeah, no, they were, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
This is just an update about the Westgate. Since we left at about 4:30, 4:45, there were still many protesters at the Westgate. There were maybe 3,000-4,000 people there having a nice time, and the police looked very relaxed to us. But it turned sour. The police turned on the water cannons, and they got really heavy, and they tried to obviously get rid of all the protesters. So unfortunately, a nice day has turned into something not very nice, with the police turning on the water cannons to get rid of all the protesters in the fields.
We're now getting closer to the fence. The clown army is here, keeping a small group of snatch squad busy. Oh, guys, they're coming. Coming. The moment I stepped out onto the field, a field ended and a meadow started. And there was a small group of police waiting. The moment we stepped out and they saw me with the microphone, they ran towards us. The clown army is there. The police seems to leave them alone. There's a long row of riot police protecting the fence, about 100 meters from the fence. There are thousands of protesters trying to get onto the road. The road is blocked by police vehicles. It's armored vehicles, water cannons, and police vans. There are several thousand police here as well. And this is the West Gate, the gate number 2, just west of the forbidden zone around Heiligendamm. There are about 4 helicopters above me. People are coming from the woods, through the fields, down from the hills, in small groups from 3 up to 10. I haven't seen any larger groups. Now I can see the superhero blockade, number of superheroes.
The clown said we should not go in. He said, I wouldn't go in if I were you.
Okay. We're walking yet through another field, trying to get away from the police. They're not charging aggressively, but they're trying to get us away, and they seem to be planning something. They are just on the side of several thousand protesters who came here to the West Gate. Yeah, they've got a line of about 500 just to the right of the mass of the protesters, and they seem to be trying to go in to clear the area. The Star March has been banned, so we are in fact 7 kilometers into the banned area, so any group larger than 3 constitutes a protest.
It's Thursday, 7th of June. It's about 9:30 in the morning or so. We're moving out in a huge block to reach the West Gate and blockade it. There's been a group overnight that have been blockading, I believe, the East Gate, and there's another group that are going to replace them. We've just passed a large field of crops where there were quite a few vans of police. We can see police up ahead on the road that we're going to join up. There's dozens of police vans driving up the road. I think I can see where the summit is taking place. There are helicopters hovering above. So the action's over. We've made it back to the camp. The blockade, I'm not sure how long it was going on for when we left, but basically we moved to another road to try to blockade another entrance, which we weren't really able to. I'm seated here in the camp with another person who is on the blockade today, who shall remain nameless for the time being. But suffice it to say, he's from London. What were your impressions of today's blockade?
Today was good fun. We left the camp at about 9:30, I think. There were about 2,000 people, I guess. It was warm, it was sunny, a bit too sunny. And it was a nice walk. We ended up through woodland and over fields, getting a nice view of North Germany. And then, I guess, after about an hour and a half, we showed up at the fence, I suppose. It felt like we had caught the police not completely off guard, because obviously they must have known that people were coming towards the West Gate. Mm. But it didn't feel like they expected quite the numbers that were there. And so we ran across the field, kind of in front of the fences, and there were some police water cannons, and there was police forming a line. But next to that was a series of gardens, I guess, but there was a pathway going up between two of the gardens. So a group of about 100, 150, maybe slightly more, ran up there, right to the gate, literally within touching distance of the fence, and blockaded there. I mean, literally only for about half an hour, but I think it disorientated the police to the extent that they suddenly had two fronts to deal with. There were the people who were still on the grass, but then there were also these people who were right by the gate. Mm-hmm. And then for the next 2 hours, I guess, we kind of had this slight cat and mouse game where the police would fire water cannons at us, people would go back a bit, then they'd go forward a bit. It was kind of nasty because they seemed to have tear gas in the water cannon. Like, I remember I wasn't paying enough attention, was shouting something, I can't remember what, but and it sprayed on the floor and shot into my face and into my mouth. And I just felt the burning and kind of had to throw all the remaining water I had in my bottle into my mouth to kind of wash it out. So that wasn't the most fun experience. But at about, I guess, after about 3 hours, because it felt, I think the blockade started at around 12, just before 12 we got there. At about 2:33, a whole load, about 2:30 I think, 10 police helicopters came in with reinforcements and were flying in a really kind of intimidating way, really low over us. They were huge.
I felt like I was at like an air show. The way they were flying in kind of some sort of formation at a very low altitude right over us, obviously for some purpose to distract us, to, I don't know, demotivate us, whatever.
They then landed and a bunch of reinforcements kind of got out of them, apparently, though they were behind the woods at that time. And I think at that point, I guess the group pretty much split in half, with half the group continuing down the fences towards the east with, I guess, an idea of going to one of the other gates or another road or something like that, whilst the west gate remained blockaded. I believe it stayed blockaded for another 2.5 hours. It was only at about 5:30 that police finally beat it back, I guess. The police didn't really have control, like there were lots of them kind of running around, but it was such a massive kind of expanse they were trying to cover. It was really easy just to, if they put a line in front of you, just to walk around it pretty much. A group came towards us from the west, having said they were blockading another road, and were just saying there were, you know, hundreds, thousands of police on the road. And at this point, the number that we were had been reduced to a few hundred at the very most. And we kind of went to, so point where we could see the road, and it was true, there was just lots and lots of police vans, and it was clear that if we went to try and block that road, we'd A, be moved very quickly, and more than likely get ourselves arrested as well. So we decided, okay, better to have another day kind of thing. And so we kind of walked the long walk home.
Yeah.
So
did you think it overall was a successful day?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I've been reading on IndyMedia that there were 10,000 people out doing various different things. Certain bits didn't seem to work, but I mean, the east and the northeast gates have remained blocked the whole time. The west gate was blocked for around 6 hours, and there was disruption caused on other roads around the area and on the kind of, I guess, south gates. So,
and the ocean as well. Greenpeace.
Yeah, I didn't hear about the ocean, so that's cool.
Yeah, I heard. I don't know who told me Greenpeace had blockaded the sea, basically.
Been a lot of communication problems in the camp. There's never been a kind of central. We're in the camp at Redalic, and we've never once, as far as I'm aware, had a camp-wide meeting, which we had every night when we were at Stirling. And I mean, those meetings are kind of hellish because you've got 600 people all with different opinions and everything else. But at the very least, you get kind of feedback at the beginning about what's happening the next day and what happened that day. And that hasn't really happened here. Like, it's been very, very confusing, especially for people who don't speak German or don't speak German well, to actually know what's going on. I mean, coming to another country, you don't necessarily know all the kind of different factions, I guess. You know, I mean, is Block G8 something that you feel an affinity with, or other such things? And finding that kind of information has been difficult, and I think has been sometimes detrimental to us going out and doing things. But I mean, overall, it's been very positive. And I mean, the camp itself is beautiful. Like, there's nice cafes and everything else, like, and a cool bar and things. But the communication, I mean, next time we do this or for our next big thing, we really need to sort out the communication and having camp wide, I mean, at the very minimum, having camp wide reports of what's happened that day and what's happening tomorrow, so that people can make up a decision about what they want to do or if they need to organise something additionally.
Well, Anonymous from London, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay, we met this photographer here in the fields joining our group, so I'm just wanted to ask you where do you come from?
I come from France, Grenoble.
Yes, and what are you doing here?
I come from make a photography report about internet. In internet, and I come from participate at the action for the action.
And you're here on your own, so you're not in a group, just totally alone.
I come from three friends, but I lost this day my friend. I go to a big group and. Not me. In the first of the week, I was in a conversion center in Rostock, and for the blockage, I went to the Wedelich campsite.
Okay.
So I stay here for next. I leave Sunday, I think.
All right. And what have you done so far in these days?
In the beginning, a lot of demonstration, the big demonstration of Saturday, a Sunday demonstration about agriculture and GMO. And after, I participate to action, and I will control a lot of time. I went control a lot of time.
Police control, okay.
Yes. That's okay, but I have a problem with photography, because one time I control and the police take my camera and delete a lot of pictures where the police, where we have the police face. And I make report with text and photo in French.
Oh, right, you do it all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And every day the action will participate.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of impression do you have? Do you have the impression that the actions were successful?
Yeah, but it's difficult to have a global point of view of this of the action.
Yes, just your experience, but, maybe?
I think it's better than the jet in Gleneagles or in Evian. I prefer.
Oh, yeah, you've been there as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think there are more people for blockage, etc. Mm-hmm. And now I reckon it's very difficult to block the G8 totally. We can just make a very good action, but to search a new form of action.
Yeah, to find a new form.
Yes. Yeah, blockading mm-hmm. or action of the against the G8.
We are at the western gate of the G8 summit defense. Well, quite close to the gate, as close as we could get.
And you are the naked blockade?
No, I'm just...
Autonomous naked.
No, I'm sunbathing, that's all.
You're sunbathing. You took the opportunity.
I like to get a tan all over.
So, since when have you been here?
With the first large group I came. Yeah, well, the first to arrive, and we formed the blockade. Yeah, and I'm very happy that it's efficient, even though we're not on the road, but the water cannons block the road, and we force the water cannons to stay around, so it's efficient.
We are at the gate 1 here in Heiligendamm, and we block the road in order to block, yes, the infrastructure of the G8 summit.
Can you tell me how you got here?
We came from our camp in from over there, 5 kilometers by foot this morning, and yes, we found other groups, and we arrived here with 2,000 people by 11 o'clock, and now we are maybe 5,000. And yes, I think it's a very peaceful and strong sign against G8.
Did you come with a group?
Yes, we are anti-nuclear group, and he has written a no day longer for nuclear power plants. And yes, we think we know that G8 is promoting nuclear power plants, and so we are against them. And we think that G8 is also supporting the policy that renewable energy is not promoted as it should be.
How long has your group been operating?
We are here since Monday. Others were coming on Saturday, but we are all working, and so we are 3 or 4 days. It's okay.
I meant like your group. How long has your group been in existence?
Since 10 years, and we are normally we are going to Wendland here, maybe 100-150 kilometers in the south. There we have the where they put the nuclear waste, Gorleben, the famous Gorleben, and there we are always blockade every year in order to show, okay, it's not the right way to produce energy. It's the most stupid way to produce energy with atomic power.
So you're notorious blockaders?
No, over the year we are informing people. But I think it's a possibility to come into the media to show, okay, here we are not. We know that we have to put the waste one day somewhere. But until there's a new production with new power plants, also in Great Britain and Germany, everywhere more or less, there's more and more nuclear waste. And until this is not stopped, we will make a blockade there.
Who are you? What are you doing here?
I'm a journalist from Denmark, working from the Danish newspaper Nyhedsavisen. And we're here to cover the events.
All right. And have you been here all day?
We've been here all day, and we arrived yesterday to witness what's going on between the protesters and police.
Yeah. And what have you seen?
So far we've seen everything been quiet and peaceful. We were out last night, 2 o'clock, at the other entrance, where we saw a lot of young people just having a good time, relaxing with campfires and singing and just relaxing.
Just relax. You didn't see any fights or aggressive fights?
No, we have only seen some fights when police tried and were successful in removing the media bus from the independent media in the middle of the city. yesterday.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
I don't know what happened before. I don't know the exact reason why they chose to do it, but it seemed kind of aggressive. There were one scene at one point where police were trying to move away with the bus, and they speeded up even though there were protesters in front of it. So that seemed pretty rough. It was a matter of luck that no one got hurt at that point. So that seemed very aggressive.
Are you allowed to pass the police line?
Yeah, we have been back and forth, and we have had no problem except on the first day where at one point we were stopped. But basically, they have been giving us good conditions to work on.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Vandana Shiva is an Indian woman physicist, eco-feminist, environmental activist and author who is renowned for her fresh and radical critique of global capitalism. Flash Radio reporters were there at a talk she gave at the Alternative G8 Summit, in which she outlined the vibrancy of the alternatives that exist to the current systems in which profits take precedence over people.
...our food system. It is part of the militarization and control of the people of this planet, so that there are no independent producers left. Even for surviving day to day, we have to depend on the system of power, control, and totalitarianism.
Questions, or what would be your main questions to the G8 leaders?
A very simple question. Which body of people elected you to gang up and make decisions on our behalf? The second one would be, how long will you fiddle while the planet burns?
Thank you.
Shiva, in your eyes, what is the connection between power and politics?
Politics is about power.
And about violence in politics?
The current system of politics has become institutionalized violence. Mm. It's institutionalized violence in terms of designing societies where citizens have no freedom, but corporations have absolute freedom. And this institutionalized violence is violent politically, it's violent economically, and is connected to that issue of economic genocide, that it is leading to people being killed and on a very large scale. Indian farmers have never committed suicide, never in Indian history. Not even during the British times, they just fought back. For the first time, 150,000 Indian farmers have disappeared. And that's just the beginning. It's in the first decade of globalization. How much more annihilation will we see? Africa is the richest continent, smallest population on the largest landmass of the planet, highest biodiversity, richest areas, from the tropical rainforest to desert ecosystem. The people of Africa have been so heavily robbed of their resources that they're having to get onto boats and go across the Mediterranean. They wouldn't need to do that if their resources and economies had not been plundered. So we are in a situation where politics is protecting this genocidal economy and has become the ultimate expression of destructive power. And that is why we need huge creation of alternatives for expression of creative power and peaceful power.
Then you think it has always been like this?
No, it is much worse. The worst of slavery systems needed to keep the slave alive. For the first time, we have a system that needs to keep some slaves alive and dispense with 80%. And it's built into the structure of the economy as designed through globalization.
And why is the reason that they need to destroy the 80%?
Because those 80% are the alternative production system.
You're working especially about biodiversity and against manipulation of seeds. Could you resume why you choose this field?
I chose 20 years ago to defend seeds and biodiversity because the corporations made it very clear. They wanted to patent every seed and every life form. They wanted to genetically manipulate every seed and every life form. And in addition to that, they wanted to do it through having freedom from regulation on environmental impact, social impact, and health impact. And I just felt a moral duty to defend the freedom of the seed, both because you have to begin somewhere, and also because seed is the beginning of the food chain. Seed is the ultimate expression of life in evolution. And where farmers have their seeds, they have their freedom, they have their lives. Where farmers have lost their seed, they've lost their freedom. And in situations like India, they're losing their lives.
Another question about the relation between North and South. You said in your speech that the green development mechanisms are another sign about neocolonialism. Is working. Can you say some more about it?
A large part of the Kyoto Protocol, as well as the emission trading schemes of the kind that Europe has evolved, are basically, without asking us or the communities that have the land, creating schemes for appropriating the common lands of the villages, putting them at the service of industry so that industry can plant trees for biofuels and count it as an emissions trading permit in part of the credits system of exchange. So the land of the poor is being appropriated by the very same companies that have created climate change in the name of offering a climate solution.
If you can say something about the role of women.
Well, as I mentioned, if you look at the economic crisis people face, it's about a crisis of resources. If you look at the ecological crisis the planet faces, it's about over-exploitation, privatization, and pollution of our resources. Now, this system of destruction has come out of a certain way of producing and consuming. And that system was born with industrialism, with the rise of capitalism, and now has got aggravated with the spread through globalization. The alternative to a Suez controlling water is women providing water and controlling water. The alternative to a Monsanto monopolizing seed is women as seed keepers. The alternative to climate change and fossil fuels are, again, women as the sustainable energy designers of society. Because women have been excluded from the privileges of industrialism, capitalism, and globalization, they still have the knowledge, expertise, and memory of how to do it differently. And we will have to do it differently very, very fast. So one of the things I've started organizing on the school I have set up for surviving, for living sustainability, for earth citizenship. One of the courses in the school of the seed, I call it, is a course on grandmother's knowledge. The G8 can retire, let the grandmothers lead.
Do you think that family farming is able to feed the world?
Only family farming is able to feed the world. Corporate farming is starving the world. First and foremost, look at the figures. 1 billion people are without food since industrial agriculture started to spread. 2 billion people are diseased because of bad food as industrial agriculture and industrial food processing has become the norm. But I'm not just saying this in rhetoric. The truth is that the smaller the farm, the more is the production of food. And this is United Nations data. The smaller the farm, the more the food production. What is the trick that is played to make it look like farms have to become large in the hands of agribusiness to improve production? First, they don't count all of the output on the small farm. They don't count the vegetables that will grow in a home garden. They don't count the fodder that a good balanced system will provide. They don't count the integration of the livestock and trees and crops. These are biodiverse systems. And in
all biodiverse systems across the length and breadth of the world, I'm sure, but I know for India because that's the land I live in. Everywhere, the smaller biodiverse farm produces twice as much as a monoculture chemical farm. So it is for two reasons. First and foremost, the industrial farm is a monoculture. A monoculture produces more of a single commodity, but it produces less food. In the Chiapas, about which Esther was talking, they talked about how the Chiapas grows only 2 tons of corn per hectare, whereas America grows 4 tons of corn. But the Chiapas grew 20 tons of food per hectare. If you take into account the bananas and the squashes and the beans and the multiple products of biodiversity. So by shifting from biodiversity to a monoculture, the calculation is made on the basis of monoculture. I have called this the monoculture of the mind. It is probably the biggest mental disease on the planet because it allows bad systems to be presented as good systems. And the second reason why the smaller farm is more productive is on the smaller farm, the family works. The family works with care. The family has to hand over that farm to future generations. They keep the soil alive. They keep the biodiversity alive. They love their animals. They know their animals as fellow species. In a factory farm, animals are prisoners of the Cargills. Do you think Cargill cares about the welfare of the animals it slaughters? For the family farm, the economy is based on love and compassion. In an industrial farm, it is based on exploitation. If the poor are being condemned to eat contaminated food, it's because our tax money is being used to subsidize it through the CAP, through the United States Farm Bill, through the Indian taxpayers' money. Why on earth should our tax money subsidize chemicals? Why should it subsidize Monsanto? Why should it subsidize Cargill? The cheap food of the industrial production and globalized trade is very costly. It's costly for the planet in terms of carbon emissions. It's costly for our bodies in terms of toxic load. It's costly for the soil because industrial agriculture is a war against the land. What we need is the real price of food. And I do believe when the real price of food is reflected, the small family farm producing for local markets will be the cheapest food available of the highest quality.
What can we learn from Africa?
I think the first thing we need to learn from Africa is that Africa is our beginning. And if we do not give Africa its due, Africa's end will be the end of all. The second thing we need to learn from Africa is the fact that it is where so much innovation with seeds, plants, biodiversity, food started. So many of the very precious crops that are grown around the world have been gifted from Africa. That is why I am so critical of this new initiative, which is called AGRA, the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa. I would not be surprised if the G8 tomorrow does not make some reference to the new green revolution in Africa. The Gates and Rockefeller Foundation have got together to spread chemical agriculture and new seeds, including genetically engineered seeds, in Africa as the solution. Instead, we should be thinking of how Africa's crops feed the world, how we need to find ways to give back to Africa their due, and most importantly, how we can use the knowledge, wisdom, and brilliance of African society to evolve their systems and also for stopping the predation of Africa. If today there's hunger in Africa, it's not because Africa does not know how to grow food. It's because every bit of fertile land was first taken over for plantations and now is being taken over to grow green beans for supermarkets of Europe.
When the G8 began, its aim was to bring together ministers responsible for various portfolios to discuss issues of mutual or global concern. Since its high-profile outing in Birmingham in 1998, however, and then the gunning down of protester Carlo Giuliani in Genoa in July 2001, things have never quite been the same. Massive numbers of people have continued to converge on these events ever since, and policing the summit has become the major focus for the authorities, ensuring that ministers can no longer hide away in anonymity. Today at Heiligendamm, the presence of tens of thousands of people trying to gain entry to the summit and shut it down in order to highlight the undemocratic nature of the event has provided a colourful display of resistance. At one point, 40 completely nude people from the naked block emerged from the cover of a local wood and descended on police lines, confounding even the most battle-hardened coppers. Somewhere else along the fence, hundreds of people began an impromptu yoga class, which really stretched police resources. In another bizarre twist, several undercover police officers were identified by protesters as trying to encourage the crowd to violently attack police lines. The plot is thickening.
Summit opposes proof. Agent provocateur wanted to provoke protesters to violent actions. Police strategy for conscious escalation. Heiligendamm, 7th of June 2007. Various eyewitnesses and journalists have verified reports where, as part of the blockade of the streets to Heiligendamm at the Rennbahn, Gate 2, on Wednesday, various S-activists dressed undercover policemen tried to provoke other protesters to violent actions. Spokesperson of the campaign Block G8 valued the event as proof for the conscious attempt of the police to paint the picture of violent protests and to escalate the protests in this way. The events yesterday uncovered what otherwise often appears as a rumor. The police is sending agent provocateurs into peaceful actions to provoke violence, says Lea Vogt, spokesperson of Block G8. It is a strategy of conscious escalation, which is in immense contradiction to the official affirmation of de-escalation, so Vogt. The police strategy is obviously consisting of evoking violent protests at any price. This practice is indeed matching to what we have experienced in the last days over and over again. Fake messages are being spread by the police press, which have nothing to do with the reality of our protests and blockades. Yesterday afternoon, five protesters in strikingly new black clothing were attracting attention. When the police helicopters landed nearby, the group was disappearing towards their direction. Afterwards, the men encouraged other protesters to take stones into their hands. The other protesters were shouting to the assumed up-for-violence men to not to use any violence. During these partly quite strong discussions, protesters from Bremen recognized one of the black-dressed men as policeman from Bremen. The so-identified plain-clothed policeman was surrounded and questioned by the protesters. Henning Orbans, who addressed the man, was astonished about the, for a protester, unusual way of talking. He addressed me with the formal you, which usually nobody does. The addressed refused to speak, even when a lawyer offered him to treat his details confidential. When asked for his name, place of birth, or political groups he was active in, he simply answered that he had the rights to give answers to these questions only at authorized places. To protect the discovered plainclothes policeman from upset protesters, some protesters brought him behind the police chains. He was accompanied by the other black-dressed man, which had already been identified as suspicious. According to the opinion of eyewitnesses, he was also an undercover policeman. He stayed with the other plainclothes policeman behind the police chains. A bit later, the police news ticker announced that protesters at the Rennbahn were arming themselves with stones and Molotov cocktails. That is purely a lie and we strongly reject these accusations, says Lea Vogt. The campaign Block G8 is keeping the way to Heiligendamm at the Rennbahn at Bürgerende since Wednesday under blockade.
Meanwhile, there were reports that an alternative media bus from Holland had been detained by police and those on board stopped from travelling to the convergence camp. The issue of police harassment is a serious one, with indie media reporting that 700 people have been arrested at the event so far, with 8 fast-track trials having already taken place. The official G8 summit is set to close tomorrow on Friday, while the protester camps and convergence centre are due to remain in place until Sunday evening.
And that was the Flash Radio News. The time now is coming up to midnight on June the 7th, 2007. And now, here is the repression forecast for Heiligen Dam at midnight on June the 7th, 2007. The conditions of police provocation, warned of in yesterday's severe repression warning, were dissipated after eyewitness reports of individuals in very new black clothing led to the revealing of undercover agents. These conditions could return at any time, however. Generally, conditions are somewhat calmer as the major turbulence caused by the arrival of the storm of G8 leaders reduces. Still, care should be taken to avoid being caught out in roving green clouds or the more intense black clouds, which can still cause distress locally. Conditions of icy disapproval from authorities and some areas of public opinion will continue. Perhaps not surprisingly, this will be reinforced by hot air emanating from vacuous speeches within the area of Heiligen Dam covered by the G8 leaders' storm. High spirits are expected in the successful blockade around the boundary fence, while warm and inspirational speeches and workshops will continue in the alternative summit area. And that was the repression forecast.
This week in Travelogue, we visit the city of Kavala on the Aegean coast of Greece. A popular tourist destination, its history is based in tobacco growing. Kavala is one of the most radical towns in Greece, with a traditional left-wing working class which has given rise to a small global population of anarchists. It is ironic then that its name has been adopted for the massive police operation at Heiligen Dam, whose purpose is to prevent the very freedom to express one's individual responsibility, which is at the root of anarchism. No wonder that such a brutal and repressive show of force should attract creative and active opposition from anarchists and protesters from around the world. Kavala was originally founded by settlers.
Flash Radio will continue to podcast every day until the end of the summit, bringing you the voices denied a platform through much of the mainstream media. Stay tuned and keep in touch. Flash Radio, www.flashradio.wordpress.com.